It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Welcome to Declare Your Independence. With me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona. It's very nice. Very nice indeed. It's the 27th of December, and hopefully you had a very nice holiday. You know, we did. And we're going to have a party at my home Saturday. You know, we holiday parties and stuff and family and all that. But, you know, we got activist friends that need to just, restock my beer. That's the deal. We have a party at our home. We'll take care of all the food and everything. You just bring your own beer and make sure I got some left over. I started thinking about it. I was running low on the beer left over, and I'm going, we need to have another party. I'm running low on beer. So we'll go ahead and do that this Saturday at our home, and it's open to all the activists, and we'll have some fun. Now, of course, that means, New Year's Eve on Friday night, you're going to have to recuperate all day Saturday, and you come over, and hopefully you'll be all healed by then, and we'll enjoy ourselves. What we're going to do today, I don't have a guest today, so we're just going to spend some time together and go over, some videos and such that, Dr. Paul has something to say about the new legislature, the Congress coming in, and there is a lot of things going on that we'll kind of prep for what we're going to do this week. And then, of course, we hit it running beginning next week into 2011. This is some of the things that you can expect what we're working on, what we did today. We went and visited a silver bullion dealer and coin dealer and gold and silver, and we did a video today with Alma, one of the activists here. Dean and I went over there and videotaped so that people would know just how easy it is to transact everything, barter in silver using what they call junk silver. Well, the reason they call it junk is I don't know why. It's 90% silver, 64 and older, and we took a bag. I had $49 in dimes, old dimes, $49 worth. How much is it worth? About $1,000. A little glad bag, little Ziploc full of dimes, went and said, all right, how much is this? $1,000. Wow. Wow. For a $5 roll of dimes, it's over $100. And you can just transact. We wanted to show how easy it was because we get a lot of calls from people. How do you do that? I mean, you're promoting this silver thing, but, where do I get it? And I want to convert it into, the electric bill doesn't take silver. So how do I do that? Well, a lot of people are, in the past few years, have accumulated people that knew it was coming, converted all their stuff into gold and silver, and they'll just sit there with it, and then they'll cash it in as they need it. Instead of waiting for their Social Security check, they just go ahead and go to the coin dealer and say, here, give me some Federal Reserve notes. I need to pay some bills. Well, that's what they're doing, and we talked about that. And we went ahead and showed it. We got the video all done just about a half hour ago, so we'll have it ready for tomorrow. The next week, Sierra's loading it up now. And we'll go ahead and make that part of our wallet voting, silver to bullets, as we're doing it with the gun shows coming here this next month. So we're getting everything all ready. A lot of the guys over the holidays have been doing the artwork and so on. And people are understanding this is going to be a big deal. The reason it's going to be a big deal is what we've been talking about for a long time on this show is that they're never going to stop spending. And if they do that and they don't have the revenue coming in, that means they got to monetize debt. They got to just keep printing money. And they do that, here comes inflation. Well, you're already starting to see it. Right now, we just found out, closing out the end of 2010, the average price of gasoline is now over $3, the average price at the end of the year. Now, we've had gasoline over $3, you know, throughout the years and so on. It kind of peak a little bit here, there, and it goes back down. This is the first time in American history that we've had ending a year of over $3 a gallon gasoline. This is it. Here we go. And the likelihood of it going down will be based on what? I think here we go. Now, and you haven't been able to see the increase, except when you go to the supermarket, because they're not telling you about it. Your food prices have gone up a lot. Now, over the holidays, we talked Friday about spending time with your family and how would you express yourself and you know, warn them. And you want to make sure that you're not, well, why didn't you tell us you knew this? You know, when at the same time, they'll, oh, you're just one of them crazy people, you know, just gold bugs or whatever, just yakety, yakety, yakety. We don't talk politics at Christmas. Okay. So what do? You know, we encourage you to just love your family and friends. On the holiday, just let them know that you care. And, you know, whatever you can share, hopefully some of the main things will stick. And all you got to do is point out a few little things. The price of gasoline at the end of the year. How much more did you pay for your food this year? Now, this was, I had my in-laws visiting from Pennsylvania. They went ahead and rented for about 5 weeks a home in Tucson. They have some friends from State College, Pennsylvania, where they're from, by Penn State University there, where my wife went to school. And they have a lot of people that winter in Tucson at a retirement community, townhouse, home share, whatever timeshare thing there. And they went down, and I've been spending time with them. What was surprising is how many people there were talking about this kind of stuff, just like their son-in-law. So when they came up for the Christmas this weekend, they just left yesterday, go back down, to be back up this weekend before they go back to Pennsylvania. They're, I don't know, you know, yep, you're not the only one, dear son-in-law. So it was an easy conversation, but it went like this. Okay, how much were you paying for food this last year? Now, they've been retired for several years. They have their home paid off. A nice home in State College is probably sell about $250,000. So it's $200,000, $250,000, depending on the market. Now, because it's near Penn State there, you know, their prices are staying up a little bit because it's a popular area. But the thing is that I just wanted to, you know, they're getting their fixed income. They got their Social Security between the two of them. They probably get, to say, an average, a lot of couples at their age are just into their 80s. They're in relatively good health. They're doing okay. They're slowing down. My parents are the same way. And they probably clear about $2,000 they get in their Social Security. If one of them dies, one of them passes away, that, you know, they're going to have to start dipping into whatever they got saved. Well, they think they're doing okay in U.S. dollars. So maybe they, you know, they cash out everything. They can net with the house and everything. They might get up to a couple $100,000, maybe even $500,000. They liquidate everything that they've accumulated over their entire life. It's not too hard of a sell to be able to make the point that if you have all of this denominated in U.S. dollars, how's inflation going to hit you? How much is this going to be worth as you go into just trying to sustain your life as you go into later years? So we just did some math. You know, they would ask questions, so I would answer them. And, you know, I come to find out as we're into the conversation for a little bit, they're friends that are moving getting the warmer climate. We don't want to be shoveling snow at 80. You know, this is what they're thinking about. All of a sudden, the peers of people that are retired, they know that they're going to be abandoned by the Obama administration. They are not going to be able to maintain the cost of health care with their portion of it. They're having to wait for care. They're having rationed care already. Some things are going to come up that they're starting to hear the news of what's not going to be covered anymore. So all of a sudden, it's starting to become, it's not a hard sell anymore. You're not hearing about it in the media, though. Why? Who are going to be screaming? What are we having riots around Europe for? It's not the inflation or policies or something. It's them cutting their benefits. Are we going to have that kind of rioting here? Maybe from municipal employees. Well, when we come back, we'll hear what Dr. Paul has to say about all this, a little bit what we can expect from this Congress coming in. We'll get into some other stuff we'll do. We're just going to relax again today. Just take it easy. We'll be right back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Turn on the tube.
Yeah, get over it here and declare your independence of me, Ernest Hancock. What I want to do is I'm going to go ahead and go right to this, I just want to make sure that you know what's going on. You know, there's so much that's happening here, and I want to make sure that, you know, a lot of people don't really understand how bad it's going to get. I'm really trying to prep everyone for it, and we're going to start take care of our own family and so on. And we're doing what we can. We're going to be highlighting we're going to walk you through it. We're going to let you know what we're doing and a lot of the activists here. And we'll be playing this later this week after we edit the video and everything. We may very well even have it done by the end of the show, and we'll start playing it tomorrow, and we'll put it up, and about how to do the silver thing. But there's a lot of reasons why. And one of the portion of the interview we had with Jerry Williams that has American Precious Metals, he talked about what they're doing in legislation, and he doesn't think it's going to hold up. And I'll tell you what it is. As part of the health care Obamacare bill, what they did is they added one of the mechanisms for funding it is if you trade in silver or gold, anything that is over $600 – accumulative over a year, so they're supposed to keep track of every little $100, $200 transaction. After it hits $600 in 1 year, or which is one coin, one gold coin ounce, you're going to trigger it. What they're going to do is you have to fill out a 1099. Well, wow, starting January 12, now there's 1 year from now, if they don't repeal this thing, when you go and you said, you know, I know I'm going to be buying me some gold and silver. You go and turn it in, IRS wants their cut. Well, Jerry Williams explained that even Barney Frank doesn't like it. The IRS doesn't know how they're going to track all this stuff. But so it's so bad that they're going to change it. Yeah, how much will they change it? Well, we're going to find out how much they change it. But the idea is that those that do know that we're going into a hyperinflation of some type, then we got to get our cut from them, too. You can't be making all that money. You know, in the past, they've even confiscated gold. They've made it illegal to hold bullion. I mean, there's just, you know, craziness. You'd think that, oh, they'd never do that. They already have in the past. Well, there's been someone that's kind of, you know, definitely been against that. Now, for a few minutes, we're just going to play a piece from Straight Talk from Dr. Paul. I'm going to go ahead and put this up, and it'll give you kind of an idea of what they're looking at, some of the issues that they're going to be contending with immediately as the new Congress comes in. Let's go ahead and play that real quick.
Well, this is Ron Paul with your weekly update for December 27th. Perhaps the biggest media story of 2010 was the influence of Tea Party voters on the congressional landscape. The new Congress comes to Capitol Hill with a mandate to end profligate spending and restore fiscal sanity in Washington, we are told. But when the House and Senate convene in January, the newly elected members will face tremendous pressure to maintain spending levels for entitlement programs. Even the most modest proposals to trim Social Security or Medicare spending will be met with howls of indignation and threats of voter revolt. Legislators who propose any kind of means testing or increased retirement ages can expect angry visits from senior citizen lobbyists ready to fund a candidate back home who supports the status quo. But millions of Americans now realize that the status quo is an illusion that will not last even another 10 or 20 years. The federal government cannot continue to spend $1 trillion more than it collects in revenue each year because we are running out of creditors. Fiscal reality is setting in, and the consequences may be grim even if Congress finds the courage to take decisive action now. Courage begins with a commitment to see things as they are rather than how we wish they were. When it comes to Social Security, we must understand that the system does not represent an old age pension, an insurance program, or even a forced savings program. It simply represents an enormous transfer of payment, with younger workers paying taxes to benefit the other beneficiaries. There is no Social Security trust fund, and you don't have an account. Whether you win or lose, the Social Security lottery is a function of when you happen to be born and how long you live to collect benefits. Of course, young people today have every reason to believe they will never collect those benefits. Notice that neither political party proposes letting people opt out of Social Security, which exposes the lie that your contributions are set aside and saved. After all, if your contributions really are put aside for your retirement, the money is there earning interest, right? If your money is in your account, what difference would it make if your neighbor chooses not to participate in the program? The truth, of course, is that your contributions are not put aside. Social Security is a simple tax. Like all taxes, the money collected is spent immediately as general revenue to fund the federal government. But no administration will admit that Social Security is nothing more than an accounting ledger with no money. You will collect benefits only if future tax revenues remain high. The money you paid into the system is long gone. My hope is that at least some members of the new Congress will cut through the distortions to see Social Security as it really is. The best way to fix the impending Social Security crisis is also the simplest. Allow younger individuals to opt out of the program and use their tax savings to invest privately as they see fit. This is the true private solution. Your money has never been safe in the government's hands, and it never will be. Thank you for calling this update at 888-322-1414.
Yeah, every Monday, you know, that was just today, Dr. Paul explaining to us, this Social Security thing is going to have to come out in the open. And I think a lot of the younger people know this, and the older people are, you know, and that was one of the conversations I had with my in-laws, and they're great people. I really love them. They're good people that played by the system. They, you know, we had this discussion. I've been married to my wife 26 years, and I'll tell you, you know, all of a sudden, you know, keep in mind, you know, they have three children. They have two sons. One is an economist at Moody's, a bond rater for the media category, like he has, like the New York Times and so on. They rate their bonds. So you know, we have good conversations, and you know, I love my brother-in-laws and their families. They're very good people. They're just, it went down the road because they were raised that way. You know, the system is good. America, good. They went and got their education at Penn State, and they went to New York University. I think he went to school in Washington, D.C. also, worked for NASDAQ. Then he went and worked for Moody's. His wife worked for The Republic, which was a very liberal publication in Washington, D.C. Then she was an editor for Newsweek. You know, she was at Newsweek when the World Trade Center was hit. And at Moody's there, John went out front and looked up and saw the second plane hit. He's like, you know what? I'm running downtown. I'm going to get my wife. We're going home. And her other son, Department of Defense, refurbing nuclear subs. So you can see I get a big, wide perspective from them, but they're coming around as they see what's happening. We'll talk about more when we come back.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Yeah, one thing I want to bring up today, and it's the end of 2010. We're going to be going back and looking at the year at the end of the week. We're going to go through all the technological advances, politics, what we've learned, things that have become common knowledge that wasn't before. It's going to be interesting. We're going to spend some time this week working on that. Now, the one thing I saw Jon Stewart on The Daily Show, he made a point. What they're really talking about is the first responders. Now, there's 9/11 responders, military and, you know, country de la fill in the blank. They're out there. They're responders to 9/11. I mean, that was the excuse for this war on terror thing. But The first responders, the people that were damaged, breathing in all that stuff, it's a long issue. But we're talking the bitty baby amount of money they're going to for their health care. You know, they inhaling all this stuff. They had a lot of health problems. So, you know, John Stewart took this on as a cause, regardless of what your issue is on this. He made a very good point. And let's go ahead and listen to him. I want you to go ahead and we'll talk about it after we play this segment.
We begin the night in Washington. Oh, this one's going to get you upset. Where Republicans, with a coming majority in the House and a greater presence in the Senate, are going to bring an end to the era of congressional moral bankruptcy.
You need some people with principle in Washington who will stand up and say enough's enough.
It means sticking ever more closely to the conservative principles that got us here.
We have a certain philosophical principles that we believe in, and we think that those principles are superior to those
These are
of
Republican
our friends across
senators.
The aisle.
And by friends, I mean principleless f-tards. So, what is their core number one principle?
Deal with the Bush-era tax cuts first, or nothing else gets passed. All 42 GOP senators signed a letter to Majority Leader Harry Reid. They vowed to prevent a vote on any legislative item until the tax issue is resolved.
That is inspiring. When a party stands together, there is nothing it can't prevent from getting done. I wonder what issues are of so little import that Senate Republicans will refuse to even vote on them until they are sure that the marginal tax rate on the top 2% of the richest Americans won't be raised from 36 to 39%. What can't we do until Uncle Sam promises not to hurt Daddy Warbucks?
Don't ask, don't tell. Yesterday, the Senate rejected an effort to open debate on repealing that policy. Also, the DREAM Act. This bill would have offered a path to citizenship for some illegal immigrants who entered the U.S. as children. Also stalled a bill to provide health benefits for 9/11 first responders.
I get the other two, but since when does the Republican Party make 9/11 first responders stand over in the corner with the gays and Mexicans? I can't believe... By the way, the 9/11 responders bill is called the Zadroga Bill. It's named for an NYPD officer who died as a result of breathing toxic dust at Ground Zero, and it would set up a $7.4 billion fund to treat illnesses arising from working at Ground Zero and compensate the sufferers for economic losses, a.k.a. the Least We Can Do / No-Brainer Act of 2010. Since Republicans took to the floor to discuss the DREAM Act and took to the floor to discuss Don't Ask, Don't Tell, I can't wait to see them take to the floor to talk about why their party hates first responders. I know what it is. It's the calendars, isn't it, fellas? You don't like the calendars.
Firefighter calendars.
Huh. It appears no Republican senators even showed up to discuss their principled stand after Schumer and Menendez. Perhaps, maybe... The Republicans were in New York administering health care personally. No, they're not there. Maybe they were at the big game. No, they were not there. Maybe they were in the frozen tundra. No, barren as ever. Of course, the Republicans wouldn't be so cowardly as to not vote for the bill without justifying their actions. Just cowardly enough not to do it on camera. Wyoming Senator Mike Enzi explained in a Sunday op-ed that his real concern was proper oversight of money already spent on 9/11 workers. $475 million of which he claims has gone missing, saying the nation can't afford careless spending no matter how well-intentioned. Mismanagement, waste, unacceptable. Now, by the way, the bill they were going to vote on actually fixes that problem, but just like in May 2008, when the Pentagon announced it couldn't account for $15 billion that had disappeared somewhere in Iraq. By the way, what did Mike Enzi, tireless fiscal watchdog, say in June, 1 month later, when he was asked to vote for more Iraq funding? I believe he said, "This isn't a perfect bill. The fact remains, however, that we need to fund our troops, so I will support the supplemental bill." Unless any of those troops are 9/11 responders, in that case, f*** those guys. And by the way, Mike, bad news. You know, all of our troops in Afghanistan and Iraq are technically 9/11 responders. Sorry, not the first responders, but the second and the third. So guess what, Republicans? Here's the deal. We're the only party that understands 9/11 and its repercussions monopoly ends now. So, no more co-opting 9/11 imagery to get yourselves elected. No more using 9/11 as the date when magically all your policies became right.
I'm concerned with these policies. The administration has moved us back to a pre-9/11 mentality. And that failed in the past. It will again.
Yes. No more using 9/11 to micromanage Manhattan zoning decisions.
It's a very bad idea to build that mosque and center that close to Ground Zero. It is, in fact, an affront to virtually all the families who lost loved ones at 9/11.
Right. No using 9/11 as an excuse for why your Bush tax cuts never stimulated the economy in the first place.
Yeah, I wish we'd had a smaller debt. I wish we hadn't been attacked on 9/11.
Or 9/11 as an excuse to do what you were going to be doing anyway.
After 9/11, Saddam's regime posed a risk that the world could not afford to take.
No more using 9/11 as a price point.
A fundraiser Wednesday night in Palo Alto, California. Volunteers for Giuliani plan to ask donors for contributions of $9.11, or, of course, 9/11.
Of course. You know what, Republicans? You use it so much, if you don't owe the 9/11 responders health care, at least you owe them royalties. So here's a little tribute. Here's a little tribute. A tribute. Yeah. We were building up to it. Here's a little tribute we put together to some of those illustrious Republican senators who, when it has served them in the past, have found comfort and advantage in invoking the heroes of 9/11. And yet, when it came time to return the favor, delivered their message loud and clear. No. So here's to the 9/11 non-responders.
That I'm proud to be an American.
I know that many of my friends and colleagues who were here on that horrific day feel a very deep and personal debt to the heroes of September the 11th.
Mr. Cornyn.
The uncommon courage of first responders called to duty on that day reflects the steadfast spirit of our great nation.
Mr. Grassley.
And then they vote no for the health
care. Heroism and bravery of the first responders.
Mrs. Hutchison.
Men and women searching and clearing the World Trade Center site work day and night.
Ms. Snow.
The firefighters who gave their lives, the firefighters who've worked day and night, the volunteers who have gone in there.
Mr. Hatch.
It showed that under the worst of circumstances, we will come to the aid not only of our friends and neighbors, but to complete strangers.
Mr. Bunning.
Each moment of September 11th, 2001 is forever etched on our minds.
Mr. Enzi.
GOP plus 9/11 ends 2010. This is, you know, such a good point that was made. You know, this is I want to applaud John Stewart's efforts on this for picking a very good example of being able to, you know, give a little doink to the GOP, because this is what was happening. You could not watch a campaign commercial, have them speak, certainly in the debates during the presidential election cycle in 08, for more than 5 minutes, or 5 seconds, without them invoking 9/11. Well, when it came down to, you know, the 9/11 responders, you know, they made a big... Now, what happened was, they passed it. He got it passed. New York Times this weekend came out, yep, the Senate passed this. Why? Because John Stewart was going to make sure they could never bring up 9/11 again. Oh, they didn't want to lose that one.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Don't stop me now. I'm having such a good time. I'm having a ball. Don't stop me now. If you want to have a good time.
Yeah, welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. Now, what I'm going to play for you is a rant that someone that listens to the show regularly put it up on YouTube, and he just took a segment of it, and he was just pointing out that, yeah, he just likes a good rant every now and then, and it was. And I'll give you a little bit of history. We'll play it in a couple of segments here over the next couple of segments, because it's not very long, but I won't have time to finish it in this segment, and we'll do it in the next one. I'll make you have to listen to start the next hour. Because what was going on is I interviewed Silver Circle, the filmmaker that And we were talking about it, and I wanted to make sure he got a good commercial. We did an hour interview, and the first three segments we were talking about it and so on. And I wanted to emphasize how important I thought this film was being made and what impact it's going to have, because we know what's coming. So I wanted to give him a good commercial, and I just really, you know, went at it. And this gentleman goes, ooh, like a good rant. So he put that up. So I'm going to go ahead and start that, and you kind of get – it kind of segues into what we did today. So I'll go ahead and play this, and you'll see what's up.
What makes a good tirade even more enjoyable is when I can imagine myself saying those very things, getting in people's faces and shouting it from the rooftops to those that just don't get it. I hope you enjoy the following excerpts from the interview – by my favorite libertarian, Ernest Hancock, regarding the new Silver Circle movie that is currently under production. They say you can hear Ernie all the way to space. Sit back and listen, and you'll learn why.
We need to watch Silver Circle movie. That's what we need to do. You know, this whole, everyone, you know, out of, I love that scene out of Lord of the Rings, because out of, I don't know, how many gazillion hours is the trilogy of that thing? You know, 7, 8 hours, something, long time. And I'll tell you this, you know, the entire thing can be encapsulated in those 40 seconds. You know, yeah, you know, give me the power. Yeah. I'll do good with it, you know. Well, of course, Gandalf is like, no. I know better. It's not who's behind the lever of power, who wears the ring of power. It's the power. Well, when you start dealing in an understanding of the next generation, for them to understand, it's this collectivization, it's a centralization of power, certainly over monetary policy. That is the problem. And for the first time in any of our adult lives, this has become a major issue that young people now understand. And when you had the older generation screaming at the top of their lungs, where are the youth? When is the young? When are they going to get it? When are they? What? They're in where? In government schools? You know, the only optimism I have is that it took trillions of dollars over generations of government schools and government propaganda and lamestream corporate media, the media that sued last century, of beating every single waking moment into your head, rock the boat. Yeah, here's the problem. You're not loving your neighbor enough by, you know, putting a gun to his head and taking his money to redistribute the way your politicians say they should. I mean, come on. So here you have an opportunity, entire generation using the technology that we have to distribute something into the minds of the populace, and especially the young, and them understand one thing, what the real problem is. It's this collectivization. It's this centralization. It is, you know, they don't get to make individual decisions with their money, with other individuals. And once this happens, once this idea takes root, once they are starting, and keep in mind, it has only been a couple of years. Out of all of our life, the 100 years almost of the Federal Reserve, it's only been the last couple of years that these ideas have got penetrated into the youth. Well, you think you're going to unlearn the truth? All of a sudden, you're going to hit 27 and go, you know, I made a mistake, or I forgot it, or I'm, you know, more concerned about what? Yeah, if they, you know, put something in the water. I mean, you know, they have to change us at a fundamental level. They have to, you know, convert us from being human beings into something else to be able to be successful in this, which is, you know, I'm keeping an eye out for. But the point is that here we have an opportunity to communicate these ideas that the older generation has been freaking out about, wanting the younger generation to do it. Well, guess what? The younger generation is going to do it themselves, their way, with their spin, and they are not going to be going around associated with it with a pledge of allegiance to a republic that's screwing them. It's not going to happen. And what's going to be? Are the older generation going to rise up and rally against the young generation, saying, screw your entire federal government. Screw this centralization, this pledge of allegiance to the flag and the public school. Heck, screw your entire government school system. You know, are you ready for that? Because that's what it's going to take. That's what's coming. That was their control mechanism for getting you onto plantation. And here you have an entire generation is ready to rise up against a man their way.
Are you ready for it? Well, guess what it includes? It includes them not being financial slaves to keep funding your entitlement programs that grew over your entire life just as an excuse to create all these financial buckets of money that then Wall Street came in and said, are we maxed out now? Is the pile as big as it's going to get? Or are you going to start taking from the pile? You're going to start retiring? You're going to start lessening the amount of money that we can steal? Well, guess what? It's all ours now. Thanks for playing. And you're going to, what, get more out of this next generation? Make them work? You know, and now there's not even jobs for them to do it. It's over. It's so freaking over. It's just what's next. How are we going to maintain our humanity? How are we going to be peaceful? How are we going to embrace the trend of humanity? We are going to the stars. Do we got to go to space to get away? And government's not invited? Are we going to do it here? Are we going to, what? I don't know. But I tell you this. We're not going to take government with us into this next generation, not voluntarily. There is a battle coming for the minds of the people. It's a revolution, and they have to try and stop it. They, them, those. There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? And you think you're for freedom, but if you're using the gun of a government, a shiny badge, and the always available, you know, gun that they got to enforce this little piece of paper, whatever the heck they said that they did, that is justifying, legitimizing them stealing from me and then my grandkids and my kids, this entire generation coming, you're going to lose because they're not going to do it. It's not, they can't. It's not mathematically possible. So what's next? What? Are you going to, this next older generation just going to be totally abandoned because you're the enemy? Because you're trying to force them to fund whatever it is, programs that were created in your generation? Is that it? Is that what you're going to do? You better be looking to have a vibrant economy with a compassionate people, because that's the only thing that's going to save your ass. If you have not been getting chickens to feed yourself and a garden and, you know, buying silver, which you still can get. I mean, I'm telling you, man, this silver thing is going to get stupid. It's going to get stupid. I remember when it used to be double digits. I mean, this is what I see. You know, I'm going to, what is today? It is the 16th of August, 2010. Mark it down. Heck, you know, give me a year. You know, give me, you know, the not even before the next presidential election cycle, all this is going to be neon flashing obvious. How did Ernie know? How the hell did you not know? This is coming. And where are you going to be? Where? And the support of whom? You know, who? I want, you know, this. So here we got Silver Circle. They're going to, like, you know, we're going to give you a little glimpse in the future how this, you know, can work, going to work. You know, I don't think we got a choice. You know, here it comes. So you have an entire generation that understands this, and they're going to start living. The agorists, we have these guys on, these free market voluntarists. You know, Liberty on Tour. I just saw them in Philadelphia this weekend. Party, Friday night, man. We do, woohoo, we're whooping it up. Or Saturday night, I can't remember. It's always a party. So we're downtown, old Philadelphia. We're looking at the Liberty on Tour van. And there's lots of Freedom Phoenix all over that. Declare your independence stickers. Man, we got a, man, we, you know, I love those guys because they're out advocating for a voluntary society as opposed to what? No, a gun to your forehead society? You're going to have to fund it. It's not working. And the only reason they did it was to be able to delay, you know, collection. You know, we got everybody's money in a bucket, and they took it. And I guarantee the audience out there, average age of, you know, older, and I tell you this, I guarantee on average you are worth at least half what you were a few years ago. Half. It all went away, didn't it? And if it didn't go away, you didn't have anything anyway, doesn't matter, because everything's going to cost twice as much anyway. Yep. Start... Yeah, I was on a roll. The thing is that since then, August, when it was what, $17, $16, $18, you started getting up around $20. Now it's almost $30. Oh, Ernie's going to turn out being rat. You know, well, yeah, you can be dead right. Got to prepare. We'll talk about it some more next hour when we come back and some more goodies. And all this week, we're going to get ready for the big show at the end of the week, summarizing 2010. And what our predictions are for 2011. And we're getting ready right not later. We'll be right back.